America. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay. Along with me is our special commentator and my dear friend, Jeffrey Hedquist. Jeffrey, are you there?
I am.
We are all folks behind the lines of socialism, and Radio Free Market is the voice of free people and free markets. This is a call-in show this week, so please jot down this number. Do you have a piece of paper ready? Okay, here it is.
I have a shovel and a piece of charcoal. Will that work?
That'll work.
Okay.
The number is 800-313-9443.
Now, that number again, Michael.
Okay, it's 800-313-9443.
Got it.
Now, after the show, we're going, if we haven't covered your questions in full, or if you'd like to send us a new question to discuss on a future show, you can go to our new website, which is at www.radiofreemarket.com. Okay, we'll give that to you a little bit later also, radiofreemarket.com. Now, folks, our new website, I want you to know, is still under development, and in the coming weeks, we're going to make it a place where you can come and learn more about free market principles and further the free market conversation with your friends, neighbors, and family. Now, today, we're going to talk...
I have some friends.
You do?
I do. Only a couple.
Why am I surprised?
Yeah, I know.
All right. So today we're going to talk about reality economics. In fact, that's going to be an ongoing theme because, as we like to quote Thomas Sowell, reality is not optional. Now, we all remember the book Stranger in a Strange Land, the old sci-fi book by Robert Heinlein. Well, even though we live in a crazy, strange world, we are going to talk about laws of nature, laws of economics, and we're going to give you a toolkit so that you can not only educate yourself, but more importantly, your kids. So ultimately, you can survive and thrive in the coming times. So here's the punchline, folks. Your kids are never going to get this education in state-run schools or just about anywhere else, particularly if you rely on the major media. But there's some very good news. The learning resources are out there. And if you know where to look and give it a little time, you can learn it. And you can teach it to your kids. So here's the really, really good news. Most of the resources are cheap or free. And so to get the show rolling, I want to start with reading some news items that you may have missed this past week. One of the more important that I saw was the Pope calls for a one-world government. Now, do we have any Catholic callers out there that are as upset about this as I am? Love to hear from you.
Or Jewish callers, or Hindu callers, or Muslim callers?
Yes. You know, the second big headline that I think most people may have missed was big banks decided to reject California's IOUs after today. That was yesterday's headline. Actually, specifically, that was Wells Fargo and Bank of America. We'd love to hear from a caller out in California that may have been impacted by this. And remember, our phone number here is 800-313-9443. And, you know, if we get through these topics, we may get to the next one, which I thought was very interesting. There was a new report that was released showing that the Federal Reserve would be closed down as a bank if it were made to follow the same rules it requires of your community banks. We're going to be back right after the break. Don't go away. Please give us a call, and we'll talk to you more. You're on Radio Free Market.
We're hearing from you.
Folks, this is Radio Free Market, and welcome back. This is Michael McKay, along with our special commentator, Jeffrey Hedquist. And
commentator because I was I've been educated with special education. That's why I'm the special commentator.
And thank you very much, Jeffrey. And so we were just talking about the headlines from last week about the Pope calling for a one-world government. That I found to be a rather remarkable development, particularly when...
Michael, you remember when we were growing up, we used to have that thing called, it's so silly now, separation of church and state.
Yeah. Yeah, that...
Yeah.
Well, Well, you know, he's asking for world political authority with real teeth. And and of course, you know, yesterday President Obama got to visit with the Pope. Now, isn't that convenient?
I think it's perfect. Timing is great. You know, it's you know, Barack and Benny together, and you know, we've got some exciting headlines from next week, which I don't know if we want to share with them because you know some.
Oh, I think we should just
the
go
headlines
right ahead.
This week were shocking enough.
Yeah, I think next week's headlines ought to be very
interesting. What it looks like. And what it is Michael has this ability to look into the future and predict what's going to be the headlines for next week. And it looks like, what do we have? Building on his announcement last week for a one-world government with real teeth, the Pope has released his availability schedule for the coronation, which I thought was good, rather than making some comment about his dental procedure. I think the coronation thing is good. And then there's another one. During the nicely timed meeting between the Pope and President Obama this past week, there was reported friction when they were heard bickering over who would get to wear the big hat.
And,
Pope has been wearing it for some time, and I've never seen Barack Obama with a hat.
Yeah, actually, I think maybe he would prefer the red gloves. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, well, you know, then you got to get a ring big enough to fit over the. It's a complicated thing.
Yeah.
But seriously, I mean, we can joke about it, but this is a bizarre kind of news.
Yeah, it is, and actually, what's significant about it is that there are so many Catholics that look to the Pope for guidance. This was an encyclical. An encyclical is a letter that goes out to the bishops on church policy. It was 155 pages, or 144 pages, excuse me, and about 30,000 words. It took quite a long time for it to come into development, so they did a lot of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And to support the idea of a one-world government is pretty significant, because one of the quotes from the encyclical is that this one world government should have the, quote, authority to ensure compliance with its decisions from all parties, that is, the nations. And this is, I think, probably one of the most important historic events in recent times for the Pope to come out and say we should have a one-world government, because many of us who have been watching the development of fiat money that is, and by the way, folks, we're going to try to define these terms as we go along. We realize a lot of you are still learning some of these terms, but some of these terms are extremely important for you to understand. Fiat money.
And there are people like me, Michael, who just have a basic understanding. When you say fiat money, I'm thinking, okay, that must be the money that they bought Chrysler with. Am I wrong?
Yeah, it is a little bit. Fiat basically means declared, but there's a much better term that a professor in France, George Guido Holzman. And by the way, I'm going to be recommending a lot of really excellent books along the way. Many are free. And you'll be able to read them online free, and we'll give you resources for that. But Holzman actually has a term for this fiat money. He calls it forced money. And forced money is because it is money because the government says so. Now, you know, it's not a bad thing that governments actually issue money. But there are two things about money that or about government money that makes it a bad thing. And that is that, they usually accompany this with what is called legal tender laws. Legal tender laws are, and if you pull out your dollar bill, anybody is looking at their dollar bill or $5 bill?
Left. You got one? Got one left. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It is, yeah. Okay.
And it says, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. What that basically means is that you have to use this money, and so that's why fiat money, as it is commonly experienced today in the world, is forced money. It's forced by the governments onto the people, that are in that particular country, and they must use that particular money. Now, you know, the history of fiat money, or excuse me, legal tender law and fiat money goes back many, many centuries. There's stories about Kublai Khan, who in China was, warring and was running out of dough because, it takes a lot to feed all those thugs that you need to, work for you. And so he would write on a piece of paper, this piece of paper is worth 20 pieces of gold. And then in order to enforce that to the peasants in China, they would be killed if they didn't accept that as money. And similarly, we had the similar kind of thing in the American Revolution, the continental currency that was created. People could be imprisoned for not using it. In France, they went to the guillotine for not using it. And so here, it's just a little bit easier. Our debts are canceled if we refuse to use it. In other words, if somebody refuses to take our U.S. dollars, then that debt is actually canceled. That's the way it is enforced here in the United States. So fiat money is a very big problem because it is basically money that government controls, and it's made much worse when it's made out of paper or made out of digits because there's no limit to what the government can create. So that's a huge problem for the world economy right now, and as a result, we're very likely going to be seeing a collapse of this at some point. By the way, the contrast to that is money that retains its value. And there's an excellent essay today, actually, by a professor, Gary North, and he actually presented a beautiful essay that is available on lewrockwell.com on how you could actually have a fiat money that potentially could retain its value. Unfortunately, that would require us to trust politicians indefinitely into the future, which I don't think is likely going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, so let's turn now to some other questions that we had from other people who actually emailed them in, and we can go into these kind of questions and discuss how we would like to deal with the various aspects of educating the public on what we call reality economics.
That's good. Let me just interject one thing, Michael.
Yeah.
And that is for anyone listening, it's a reminder that although we have some ideas on how this show could go and what format and what timing and all, give us a call or email to let us know what would be the ideal show for you, because this is really your show. We want you to participate in the construction of the show, the way we format it, the kinds of questions we answer, the kind of questions we ask, the kind of topics we cover. So don't hesitate. This is one of those opportunities where you can really help create this show from ground zero, rather than relying just on our preconceived notions of what the audience really wants. We really want to know. So that's a reminder to participate and know that your participation will help create the show and it going on into the future. So with that having been said, I will turn you back to a guy that I have known for much too long, Michael.
Yes. Well, we got a lot of questions from various people that when we were talking about the construction of this show. Mm-hmm. And many of these questions had to do with, regulations and monopolies and fraud and corruption. And one of the questions that I thought was really excellent came from a friend of ours down in Australia. And he said, don't we need regulation to prevent monopolies, fraud, and corruption?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to ask ourselves a very important question. Who creates these monopolies? And that's a very, very important question. Now, we're going to be coming up to a break here in a minute, so we may not get this question fully developed, or this answer fully developed, but we will address it when we get back. The first thing that we want to know, or we want to definitely say is that, yes, absolutely, we need laws that enforce protect us from fraud or force. And so fraud or force is actually the big problem that we have in the world. And so how do we protect ourselves from those? And how does this question of monopolies and licenses, how do these come into play in the realm of trying to protect us from these kinds of situations? All right. So I see that we're actually coming on into our break now any second. And so we will be back.
We'll be back after this. This is what's called a teaser, so that you stand by for 3 minutes, come back, and Michael will answer these great questions.
All right. Talk to you soon. And we're back. This is Radio Free Market. This is Michael McKay along with Jeffrey Hedquist. So we were just talking about monopolies and fraud and force. And common problem people have with big business is they're afraid that big businesses are going to monopolize a particular market. And there's a lot of people that I've talked to that are quite concerned about companies overrunning or reducing our choices. And because we as consumers, we love our choices. And monopolies, of course, eliminate our choices. That's what monopolies are all about. And I think that the number one thing that people have to understand related to monopolies is that there is a monopoly in existence today that is more important for them to understand than any other, and that has to do with the monopoly of money. And governments use force legally, and they are the entity that we have empowered to actually use force to essentially protect us from those that would use it illegally. And so out of fear for individuals that would steal from us and otherwise use fraud, which would be stealing from us, we have made this compact with this entity called government to actually protect us from those that would use force against us. But in doing so, what we have done is we have empowered this entity called government to use force, and that is the legal use of force. So we're going to be talking about that particular topic a little bit more as time goes on, I'm sure quite a bit more, but specifically we want to talk about it right now as related to monopoly. Monopolies can only exist if there's some way that they can force consumers to abide by them. And so businesses will naturally want to have as much business that they can get, and when they recognize that there is a government agency that can legally use force, well, golly, you know, let's go get some special privilege where we only are the ones that you can that can provide that particular service or that particular product. And as I mentioned, the most important of all of the different monopolies that exist, and there are many of them that are in existence today, is the one for money. And here in the United States, this brings us to the topic of the Federal Reserve. Now, Jeffrey, let me ask you, do you feel like you understand how the Federal Reserve operates?
Of what happened in 1913, and I know that it's been kept secret from most people, or at least not exposed to most people, and most people's understanding is, as mine has been for decades, is that, oh yeah, that's the federal government. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's okay, they're taking care of us. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, of course, it's not the federal government at all.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not, actually. It's actually a partnership. And it is a partnership between a private entity that operates in tremendous secrecy along with the federal government. And I'm actually holding in my hand a research report, which I would recommend all of our listeners to go ahead and download. They can download it for free at a wonderful website called AIER.org. That's the American Institute of Economic Research.
AIER.org.
That's correct.
Okay.
And the name of the report is called Toolkit for Transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little technical. Most people will have a little bit of a problem with some of it because it is designed for economists and it's designed for accountants, people with that kind of a background. But you don't have to read all of that stuff to understand a couple of basic things. There are some basic rules for accounting, and they are called the General Accepted Accounting Principles. We call them GAAP, you know, in the financial industry. Mm-hmm. And that is what banks are required to use, commodity firms are required to use, stock firms, and
any public company, right?
Yeah, everybody. Except the Federal Reserve is not required to use those particular accounting standards. They have a particularly unique accounting standard, which they call the Financial Accounting Manual for Federal Reserve Banks, called the FAM, because they're all a big FAM. And the FAM standards are harder to understand. They're not very transparent. And to give you kind of an overview of how it works, the leverage that the banks are allowed to give to the investments that they have, for example, now these are the entities that the Federal Reserve oversees, is it's set. And right now, let me put it this way, without getting into a lot of technicalities, the Federal Reserve has a 400% greater rise in its reserves over the course of the last year, as opposed to 8% for the banks. And we'll bring this topic out again right after the break.
Good. Let's hear more about that.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. I think everybody will want to understand this one very well. Okay. Hey, this is Radio Free Market. I'm your host, Michael McKay, along with me, Jeffrey Hedquist.
Yep, and my job, of course, is to ask the dumb questions, and I'm sorry, Michael, but you know, everyone said, but you've been doing well explaining things, so I figure if I can understand it, then almost anyone else can. And you're talking about the Federal Reserve as being such a, what do we call it, an accounting anomaly, that they don't have to be responsible to follow GAAP, and it's for that reason that Bernanke is saying, oh, no audit, because, you know, then we'll crash. It'll be, and what he's saying is, it'll be exposed. Am I right?
Yes, you are. It's yesterday, one of the vice chairman of the Fed came before Congress and tried to explain to Congress why they should stop the bill that is currently in the House of Representatives. It's bill number H.R. 1207. I recommend everybody to look that up. That is the Audit the Fed legislation, currently co-sponsored by about 250 congressmen, the majority of congressmen,
mm-hmm.
and also being held from a vote by Mr. Barney Frank, the head of the committee that it is sitting in and has been languishing in since February.
You know, the question has come up. I mean, it's just such a basic question when you see one of your elected representatives on the stand saying, okay, now what you're telling me is you cannot account for trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of taxpayers' money? Oh, that's
right.
Correct.
Yep.
It's enough to make a taxpayer. Now, I know that you, Michael, probably don't pay any taxes, but I do, and I'm not so happy about this.
I wish that was the case.
Yeah.
Hey, we have a caller now. We have John from Tennessee.
The Volunteer State.
John, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you both. First of all, to your counterpart, it is absolutely fantastic to be able to talk about such serious matters and chuckle. So,
well, you know, we have to.
Well, I'll tell you about this, John. The other morning I was having my oatmeal, and I read that thing about the Pope calling for one world government, and I almost lost my breakfast. And out of that came some dark humor that you got a piece of it earlier through Jeffrey. But, you know, it isn't a laughing matter, but we do have to try to keep our lightness about us. Otherwise, we want to go.
I think it's a sign of a great broadcaster and humor to serious topics. But anyway, is it Jeffrey?
Yes.
Okay, Jeffrey, I think part of the problem is that we've got a media that is doing exactly what Edward Bernaysi said in his book Propaganda. I mean, we are being moved and manipulated, many of us anyway, without our knowledge, because they understand what makes us tick. And when Judgment Day comes for these folks, they're going to be able to say, well, look, we put The Wizard of Oz in the movie theaters and on television every year for 70 years. We put It's a Wonderful Life on. They thought it was about an angel getting his wings. We were telling them about fractional reserve banking, and nobody got it. Basically, when you and I and the other people that understand what the Federal Reserve is and how it works and where it puts Americans basically in slavery to the lender, the people that are loaning money to our government have enslaved America, they look and they say to themselves, I'm sure, well, we can't do without money. Even if it is crooked, what would we buy our goods and services with? We didn't have this phony green paper that basically presidents throughout history have fought. Andrew Jackson, they attempted to kill him twice because of what he right. did to the National Bank. He understood that if a corporation, privately held corporation, were allowed to control the money supply, that they could manipulate the government, that they could control the people, that they could incrementally and with the use of gradualism and inflation and deflating the currency could steal the wealth of a nation and redirect the money into their own hands. You know, I call into these so-called financial programs, you know, the Dave Ramsey and the different ones around the country that say invest 25% in four different areas and you'll be fine, leave it alone, forget about it. Well, the truth of the matter is it was a Ponzi scheme in 1929. The movers and shakers, that the individuals that were implementing the Federal Reserve Bank, played it out. You know, the thing had said that when the guy that's shining your shoes is in the stock market, it's time to get out, because they got all of the Ponzi's have participated. All the money's in there. The poker game's about over. They're throwing their hand in. They're cashing out. And they're going to leave you on a sinking ship. That's where we're at now.
And the point you make, guys, John, is so powerful, and that is look to the media and see beyond it. Don't just accept what is being produced for you and to motivate you emotionally. Because and that I think is a challenge. I know, because I work in media and I see what goes on, and I'm aware of it. And I think that Americans are becoming more and more aware of it. And you definitely point out that fact, that we need to really look beyond.
And don't believe me. Don't believe Jeffrey. You've got a brain. God gave you a brain. Go read.
Yep.
Go study. Draw conclusions.
Yep.
Look at facts. Let your paradigm shift. Let yourself realize that you've been lied to.
Right.
Break the chains.
Yeah. I applaud your attention on that, John. I think you're pointing our listeners in the right direction. And I think a lot of the people listening to the show are aware of that. And the next step is to make your kids, who are probably more aware of cynicism and lies than this generation is.
Well, once we know the truth, then something happens.
Right.
Responsibility.
Right.
What are you going to do with it? You're going to turn your head and walk the other way?
Right.
Or are you going to face it and do what you can to set the lies straight and develop a system or put America in a position where it's able to go on? And those that have done this are held accountable for their actions, for their crimes. And it's nothing short of a crime.
Okay.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate
right.
it.
Well, thank
you, John.
Appreciate it. Hope to hear from you again. You know, I want to comment on one thing that John just brought out, that we really are used to having a sense of hopelessness in relationship to our government and our, or maybe I should say it this way. I perceive that there is a tremendous amount of hopelessness out there related to government. People feel that they cannot really affect their government. And, you know, the concept of voting, we feel, oh, golly, you know, we'll vote. And all these starry-eyed, well-intentioned people, many that I know, thought they were going to get a brand-new experience with the new administration. Well, they didn't. They got basically a continuation of the same thing. There is no real difference between the Democrats and the Republicans insofar as one basic thing. They both basically believe in a central controlling force, a central controlling entity that has dominion over our lives. It's just a question of arguing as to which areas do they want to emphasize. And so, you know, this sense of helplessness, I think, has to be addressed. You know, there's my background is in business and in sales and in negotiation activities. And there's an old saying about in negotiation theory that a tactic perceived is a tactic disarmed. And so I want to voice an encouragement for everyone to take what John was just saying to heart, that it is our responsibility to educate ourselves. I talk to people all the time that say, well, I don't read books. And I mentioned this on an interview I was on last week with our dear friend Clyde Cleveland, who has the hour right before us, that that's like saying I'm going to go on a trip, but I'm only going to put gas in my tank for the first three gas stations, and then I'm going to coast the rest of the way. In other words, life's education never stops, and we all have to continue our education. And the various medium that we choose are numerous right now, but I want to mention this one website. I alluded to it earlier, Mises.org, Mises.org. This is the Ludwig von Mises Institute, and this is their website. Go under the literature tab and go to their bailout primer. And there's literally there scores of essays and book references that you can download for free that will educate you on any number of different aspects of how this particular economic crisis came about. But more to the point, they really help you to understand the systemic understanding of how our economy works. And it's an extremely valuable research tool to have available to you. I strongly endorse it.
And here's the thing, Michael. It's interesting. For decades, we've been, you know, coming back to that comment about the media, we have really been influenced to a major extent by the media, which has been owned by the corporations, which is really the government. And the challenge has always been, what can an individual person do? Well, the time that we are living in now is one of absolutely the most exciting times because of the democratization of information.
Mm-hmm.
It's available, you know, and then we all become individual broadcasters, journalists, purveyors of information and opinion, and you know, with all the social networking that's available with Facebook and with YouTube and, you know, so many abilities to get the word out to thousands and thousands and millions of people almost instantly.
Right.
We have no more excuse now,
right,
to say, oh, well, it all happens in the voting booth. Well, it doesn't all happen in the voting booth, folks.
Right.
Every one of us,
right,
can mobilize millions of people with the right words sent to the right people. With the networks are there. We have been granted this incredible social web out there where we can take something that we're indignant about, get opinions on, get other people motivated, and, you know, so the power really has returned to the grassroots more than almost at any time in history.
Yes.
And this is an exciting time.
Absolutely. The most power that we have ever had. I also want to read one more headline from next week, you know, because I found this one that is in the crystal ball coming up.
Oh, yeah.
I've been looking at my crystal ball. I found this headline from next week, and it says the Federal Reserve is indicted for counterfeiting, and J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs were indicted for money laundering on the Fed's behalf.
You know, Michael, I think you're just like a rabble-rouser.
I am.
I wonder if Bill from Ohio is a rabble-rouser.
Yeah, hey, Bill. Are you online now?
Oh, yeah. Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
Okay, how are you doing?
Good, good. I'm just wondering if you can comment on some of the other the preachers. You seem to single out the Catholic Church a lot, but, of course, John Hagee is on record, you know, pimping the New World Order. Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, they've been preaching this stuff for a long, long time, but not a word of it from you. And I'm just wondering why.
Well, that's a good point. Thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate you bringing that point out. You're right. There's been a lot of people that have been calling for the New World Order.
This is just the most recent one.
And it's been, you know, the interesting thing for me, I grew up Roman Catholic. I spent 3 years in a Catholic seminary. And
Post-Vatican II?
Pardon me?
Post-Vatican II, I assume.
Actually, right about the same time as Vatican II. And I had a very, very hard time when I saw this little news event come up because, you know, 25% of the population of the United States consider themselves Roman Catholic. They are the single most significant swing vote in the elections. In 2000, they voted for GW, and in the last election,
the evangelicals. You're leaving out the evangelicals.
I'm merely talking about Roman Catholics. Actually, that's all I'm really talking about right here.
Okay.
You know, and I found myself, you know, particularly distressed because, you know, so many of my circle, my family, you know, come from that tradition. And I know that this is going to cause them a lot of pain because they look to the Pope with reverence. They like the Pope for various reasons, and it causes them confusion when a spiritual leader comes out and basically, as Jeffrey says, violates that that wall of church and state. And so it's as if it were an anointing. To me, it was... not very much of a surprise that the very same week that this encyclical is released, that President Obama shows up for a little photo op visit, you know, we could get very. I got very depressed by the whole thing because of you know the vast impact that the Pope's words have on the world. But you're absolutely correct. This notion of a one world government.
Yeah.
Being backed by various different religious traditions is just an absolute tragedy.
If you were to compare encyclicals from the other popes, the previous popes, certainly pre-Vatican II, you would see the direct contradictions of everything that this pope is stating. They opposed certainly usury, they opposed communism, abortion, all of these isms that we now have gotten through this marriage of Protestantism and Judaism. At least you can, I'll give you this, and maybe take hope in this. In the Catholic nations that are still left, Ireland, Argentina, Poland, Spain, Portugal, et al., there is no abortion. It's not legalized. Now, here in this country, in Protestant nations that are run by Jews, we do allow them to slaughter our children, to pierce their skulls, and suck out their brains. So it's done in England, it's done in Germany, it's done here in the United States, it's done in Canada. But at least, you know, take heart that at least that's not, you know, that's not yet... those things haven't come to fruition. They're working on it. You best believe that they're working on it. But you still have not mentioned the evangelical Christians, who really were part and parcel to putting Bush into office. They were the ones that pimped these wars, still do. They pimp apartheid. They pimp Israel, U.S. foreign policy. They support them unequivocally. You know, it would just be nice to get a little bit of a balancing act.
All right. Thank you very much, Bill.
Sure.
We are going to talk again right after the break, and thank you very much for your call in. You're listening to Radio Free Market. And we're back. I'm your host, Michael McKay, along with Jeffrey Hedquist.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
Anyway, great call from a couple of very aware people. This is great. And Bill brought up, again, a tremendously good point, and that is no matter what religion is there, when religion gets involved in government to sway their followers, and you could say that it can happen with any religion in any country, whether it's Jewish or Hindu or Muslim or evangelical or Catholics who happen to have great influence over one of the countries that some people would like to unite as three countries in one. There's a lot going on that, again, with our awareness and with our ability to reach out to our friends, neighbors, and other people, we all need to kind of be activists to save what we believe in. And that's part of what this show is about, to remind you that you have the power to do that. Let me just step off my soapbox real quick.
Okay, great. Thank you. Hey, don't trip on that thing. Hey, listen, I want to introduce everybody to our show from next week. We're going to have a very exciting show next week. We have a friend here that teaches Austrian economics at the University of Iowa. His name is Mr. Patrick Barron. And Pat and a friend of his that is a chief of staff of a big monkey muck at the European Union Parliament are putting together a conference introducing Austrian economics, which basically what that means, folks, is they're going to be talking about gold standard. We're talking about get off fiat money and get to a gold reference money. And they're making this presentation next Tuesday in Strasbourg, Germany. And we are going to actually tape that show. Unfortunately, we won't be able to have call-ins on that show on Saturday next week. But we're going to interview Pat and a couple of the other participants of this conference and find out a little bit of how that went. The hope is that there's going to be some receptivity. The significance is that right now there are no conferences being presented to the Congress people of the United States on this extremely valuable topic. I mean, you have Dr. Ron Paul that's out there constantly talking about Austrian economics and the principles of sound money, but very few people, except those that stop by his office and listen to him from time to time, are really cultivating or inculcating that information. And so we're going to have this great interview next week, and I'm very excited about that.
All right.
And, we'll
like
go
thank
there.
Everyone for being with us this time, by the way, and please tune in next week.
Yes, and we are going to continue this process of attacking the pernicious lie that the current economic crisis is due to a failure of the free market capitalism and a lack of adequate regulation. And our long-term focus is what we call reality economics, you know, talking to real people about how economics works and in such a way that they can explain it to their kids, which is really what we really need to come to be able to do. I'm going to plug another book before we go off air today. This is by Richard Mayberry. It's called Whatever Happened to Penny Candy. This is a great introductory book for anyone. It was designed for homeschoolers ages 12, 14, and up. It's absolutely revolutionary to people to be able to hear that, to get that basic information about the connection of how money, ethics, and law are all so intimately interrelated. You can get that book at bluestockingpress.com. This is Michael McKay.
Jeffrey Hedquist.
Jeffrey Hedquist at Radio Free Market. Please visit us at radiofreemarket.com. Thank you very much, and you have a wonderful day.